Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. So today we have a really riveting conversation with my guest, Ron Geffner, a prominent attorney and seasoned veteran of the Securities and Exchange Commission. We get to take a peek into the SEC, what red flags they look out for, and what he thinks of the latest case against Sam Bankman-Fried. I don't know if you guys are like me, but when people talk about crypto, I sort of feel like they're talking about monopoly money. Ron breaks down crypto and gives us his perspective on this tricky world of virtual currency. We also delve into why celebrities like Kim Kardashian, Floyd Mayweather, and a lot of others have gotten into legal troubles for being so outspoken on the trend. We talk about navigating the current political climate, economic concerns, and finding out what your risk tolerance is when investing. I learned a lot, and I think you guys will too. Take a listen to Ron Geffner. Ron, thank you so much for joining me at Misunderstood. It's such a pleasure to have you here.
Such a pleasure to be here. I feel like the name of your show sort of describes my life.
Well, I feel
except
like
Mr. Understood. Mr.
Yes, right. I was going to say, yeah. I feel like it would be better to have a Mr. But yes, I think it's a good name and I'm very proud of it. I think being misunderstood is a universal concept that most people can understand. And so far this has worked out for most people because they do feel like they have something to talk about, right?
It's a relatable title.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. So where are you? You're in New York?
I happen to be sitting in my office in New York.
Okay. I love that. I'm down in Florida and I love when people can be with me from all over the place. So welcome. All right. First, I want to get in for our listeners to describe who you are and where you came from. So will you give us a little bit of your background and how you got into law to begin with?
Sure. I am a first generation American. My father was born in Vienna during the Holocaust, right after Kristallnacht. His parents put him on a boat to Palestine at the age of 12 with a suitcase. And my father fought with Israeli underground, the Haganah. And my mother, brother, and sister were born in Israel. And this ties into my career and who I am as a person. Parents came to the U.S. I was born here. I'm the youngest by 13 years, same parents. I was always told that I spoke well. It probably did not hurt that I had siblings 13 and 15 years older. Mm-hmm. Parents offered to pay for an education. How can I turn down a free education? And I found I actually really liked it. And I started my career at the SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission. Mm. There were six of us, as I understood, hired out of an applicant pool of 2,000 people. And I was put into a group that prosecuted asset managers. It was called 40 Act. This was pre-Madoff, before it was getting the attention it's gotten since Madoff.
Right. So, yeah, I think that's how a lot of people have started to, I mean, that story became very mainstream in a way that I feel like it became entertainment news, not just business news. And people really started to follow who the SEC was, what they did, what kind of, you know, how it got involved. And then, of course, his downfall became something that now movies have been made of. And people find that obviously very entertaining to see people fall off of a pedestal. But so I know from reading about you that you joined SEC very early on. Is that just luck? I mean, how did that actually happen?
It was through an on-campus interview. And I was very fortunate to have had the opportunity. But I don't know how many other people can relate to the concept. It took me a while to figure out what I wanted to do. I couldn't say in college I always wanted to be a lawyer. That wasn't the case. In when I got to law school, I think because I did not have a preconceived notion of what it was, mm-hmm. I found it really interesting. I started to really enjoy knowledge or information for the knowledge I was obtaining, as opposed to up through college, jumping through hoops and rote memorization. And I didn't really feel like I was going to be able to apply what I learned pre-law school. But with law school, it really made me realize the importance of law and the role it plays in our lives. Mm-hmm. And then with regard to the SEC and post the SEC, and as I've had different life experiences, it's also how we view money differently from person to person. And that became even more apparent post my divorce when I started to date. And that bubble of safety that I lived in was sort of challenged with fresh notion.
Right. What were some of the first cases? I mean, you don't have to get too specific. What kind of things were you getting into at the beginning?
There was outright fraud, mm-hmm. where there was a group of people who worked for IBM, and they had all aligned. They all immigrated to the United States from the same place. It's called an affinity fraud. Okay. And they hyped an investment opportunity. And eventually the hype, which was a Ponzi scheme, didn't pan out, and dealing with investor complaints, and ultimately worked with the FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office. And the person went on the run, and they tracked him down, I think, to Atlantic City. So that was one. And something more complex with regard to misrepresentations in the marketplace by some traditional asset managers that were more technical violations as opposed to, in my mind, outright stealing and hardcore lying. Hmm. So it was a real mix of a lot of different things.
Right. And I'm always curious, how are people, how are you getting these red flags for certain people? I mean, we see movies like The Wolf of Wall Street, where the SEC gets involved, or the Madoff thing, or, obviously tons of other things that we followed. But how is it that they come on the desk of the SEC to get investigated? Is it a tip-off? Is it something you guys have been following? How does that work?
It's a few things. It was either investor complaints. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it was journalists as well who would break a great story early on. And so when I started, first, it was a great job to have right out of law school, because it really, I was doing something for society beneficial to the public. And the goal wasn't to go out and just prosecute people to like put a notch on your belt. Mm-hmm. It was really to try and get to the truth and to resolve it in as best of a way, given the facts and circumstances. So it was a good entree into the right way to practice law, as opposed to just winning for the sake of winning.
Yeah, right. What are some of the red flags that will get the SEC's attention?
Garden variety, fraud, lying, misrepresentations. So it depends on what we're necessarily discussing. So my focus being asset management, mm-hmm. and money managers. Mm-hmm. It's people that lie about their performance, people that don't fully disclose conflicts of interest, so that the investor has an opportunity to really understand the information in a balanced way. Mm-hmm. The purpose of the federal securities laws is to create a balanced playing field so that you and I have access to the same information that somebody's sitting above us in a lofty high tower who's worth billions of dollars. Mm-hmm. It's to create fairness. Doesn't always work that way, but that's the purpose of the law.
Right. I thought it's interesting that you bring up sometimes you can be tipped off by a great journalist, because you see a lot of people think sometimes that the media right now is not fair and very biased. So it's interesting to me to hear you say that people would actually take a really good article and follow that lead, because sometimes, you know, people are saying, oh, it doesn't matter. Any press is good press. Who cares? And I'm blanking now on either what news story or movie I saw where something was written in an article and the people it was written about were like, oh, that's not a big deal. Like, we're just getting press. People are going to know about us. But at the end of the day, the SEC was like, oh, wait, maybe this is a big deal.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that subscribe. There's no such thing as bad press. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't necessarily agree. Information has a way of following you at times. So it's important to be the best person you can be. And, right. And we all make mistakes. So there's also an act of contrition and forgiveness as well. It goes back to, like I said, one of the triggers of health isn't just physical health and mental health. It's also financial well-being, mm-hmm. In many parts of the world, including the United States. So it's really important that people put thought into how they invest their money and what their need for money is and the role it plays in their lives.
Let's face it, the holidays can be a great time. You get to see family, friends, go to parties, but it can also be really busy where you feel stressed and tired. You're running around and you don't feel your best. You're not getting the vitamins and supplements you need. That's what led me to AG1. I gave AG1 a try because I wanted a single solution that could help support my entire body and covers all my nutritional bases every day. It's amazing for immune system support and tastes great. Not only did I replace my multivitamins with AG1, but I love that every scoop also includes probiotics, prebiotics, and digestive enzymes for gut support. When I started drinking AG1 daily, it made me feel different. It showed a different energy level, that's for sure. More relaxed, and I could focus. That's because AG1 is a foundational nutritional supplement that supports your body's universal needs like gut optimization, stress management, and immune support. Since 2010, AG1 has led the future of foundational nutrition, continuously refining their formula to create a smarter, better way to elevate your baseline health. So if you've ever been interested in trying the product, AG1 is the supplement I trust to provide the support my body needs daily, and that's why I'm excited to partner with them. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/misunderstood. That's drinkag1.com/misunderstood and check it out. Right. Okay. So that's where we get into sort of what I want to talk to you about, because I think that, listen, you don't have a lot of people watching Bloomberg News. Sometimes, you know, CNBC will be something a little more mainstream, but for someone to be into financial news, you have to have a want and a need to be watching that. So I want to kind of break down for our listeners things that, that might be interesting to them that they can really follow along with. So I want to have you describe, if you would, this whole, phenomenon with crypto. What is crypto? Can you break it down? Because to me, it sounds like playing with monopoly money and I just don't get it.
So there's the currency called cryptocurrency, and then people confuse it with the concept of blockchain. And blockchain is an open ledger. It's a form of accounting. And I think the idea was really to form an asset that was not the word people use is decentralized. But what it really means is you don't have to go to a bank. You don't have to go to traditional institutions and have dealings of your assets or money with them. It enables you and I to not even really use a currency that's backed by a government to barter. And cryptocurrency started with Bitcoin and eventually, as the asset class of cryptocurrencies grew, more and more cryptocurrencies were offered. Now, like any other industry that catches fire, if you look at assessing how businesses grow, there's often growth, hypergrowth, and then consolidation. These are traditional trends in a lot of industries, whether it's technology, it's going to happen with cannabis if it hasn't happened at various times, and other asset classes. And so what happened was, the concern for me, at least as a former enforcement attorney, was I'll give you an example. I was in Miami. I'm at a hotel. I have about an hour to grab some sun. I'm sitting there in my lounge chair while I'm reading like my phone and responding to emails. I hear two women talking about Dogecoin and how the woman made money and bought a car. So being a person who can't control himself, I like interceded in the conversation. And I was like, what made you buy Dogecoin? And it seems to be, like, from my perspective, a large swath of the public just traded on information because they heard somebody else talking about it. Like, it's referred to as a greater fool theory. And it started in the 1600s with the tulip bulb craze, where ultimately in Holland, people were buying and selling tulips that were the price of their homes, tulip bulbs. And eventually the market fell out. And if you refer to a movie and you refer to Wall Street, Wolf of Wall Street, well, if you watch, and we mentioned Anthony Scaramucci, he was in Wall Street 2, and Gordon Gekko mentions actually the tulip bulb craze as he's greeting his future son-in-law. This has gone on for centuries. So crypto serves a purpose. And I would say from my perspective, it became bastardized as it caught fire of people wanting to get rich quick. I remember going to one of the earlier conferences. It was Damon Dash in Miami. And I get there and it was like going to Comic-Con. I'm sitting there like sort of quiet. And you hear people trading name, like handles, as if they were like a comic book character. So that in my it's hard to ever forget that as the early enthusiasm behind cryptocurrency, which drove it. It's going to have a place in the financial world, how big or small is yet to be determined. And the issue that's coming up with the law is whether cryptocurrency is a security or whether it's not a security. And if it's a security, then it's governed by all these laws that came out in 1933 and 1934 that sort of govern the stocks and bonds that we buy in the marketplace today, or somebody buys on our behalf. And the balance out to that was, by not having clear and concise laws, you had the Wild West of people not knowing, and they're claiming not to know how to deal with it. I have a different opinion on it, and it may or may not be the popular opinion. But when you're going through a lot of, if you go from growth to hypergrowth, it's hard to take control over how you're running your business because the money's flowing in everywhere. And so you're playing catch up with your controls over the growth of your business.
I love the holiday season, buying presents, lots of events, celebrations, but it can be hard to eat healthy when you're so busy running around with a million things to do. Thankfully, I found Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal delivery service. You can get chef-prepared, dietitian-approved, ready-to-eat meals for breakfast, lunch, and dinner delivered straight to your door. You'll save time and eat nutritious meals, all while living your best life. Factor is great for everyday meals. No prep time. You can skip the grocery store line, which means you don't have to worry about making sure you have all the correct ingredients. They take care of all of that for you. And Factor is fresh, never frozen, and the meals are ready in just 2 minutes. All you have to do is heat and enjoy. With over 35 plus weekly meal choices, you will never get bored. And now Factor is offering gourmet plus options for the holidays. I love that. So you can level up and do something even more special. Premium ingredients prepared to perfection by their chefs. And if you're looking for calorie conscious options over the holidays, they've really got you covered. Dietitian approved calorie smart meals with around or less than 5,500 calories per serving. They've got something really for everyone. So head to factormeals.com/understood50 and use code understood50 to get 50% off. That's right, 50% off. That's code understood50 at factormeals.com/understood50 to get 50% off. Enjoy. Got it. Okay.
And that's happened. Think about like the food industry and every industry, airline industry. Many industries have gone through this pattern.
Yeah. Right. So crypto is like the name of the arc of everything. And Bitcoin, for example, is one of the currencies, correct?
Correct. Ethereum, Dogecoin, there's hundreds.
Okay. So there are hundreds. It's not, but Bitcoin is the most famous that most people are familiar with. Is that correct?
It seems to be the one that everybody seems to know if it's not Ethereum, but I would think the public knows what Bitcoin is at this stage.
Got it. And what is the difference between the currencies? Like, why would I buy Bitcoin as opposed to whatever?
Now you're going to my ability to really explain it in a way, because I haven't dealt, it's crypto's something I deal with, but it's not necessarily my primary focus.
Right.
But the white papers behind each crypto tends to be a white paper that's written that talks about its use or its business plan, whether it's a utility token, a range of different things. And each of those white papers would explain its purpose. Now, whether once the volume of a token increases, whether people can differentiate the purpose or differences, that's a great polling question I would ask the public.
Okay. And just curious, why would somebody invest in Bitcoin versus, you know, like a well-regarded tech stock?
To some degree, diversification on some level. And the price of Bitcoin, as we started, you know, the various wars, has actually gone up in value. So I think some people are looking at it, and I don't know, because it's not me who's doing it. I'm not having these conversations.
Yeah.
I think there are some people in the marketplace that are looking at it similar to gold, that it's not correlated to other asset classes. Mm. Now, I'm not sure how true or not true that is, because if you think back to 2008, there wasn't really a safe place to hide your money.
Mm-hmm.
Anything you invested in seemed to get hit. Right. And I'm speaking generally. I'm sure there's exceptions that I'm not either familiar with or don't know.
Mm-hmm.
To remind people that are listening, I'm a lawyer, and I'm not the person you call to how to invest your money.
Right. No, of course. But I'm just getting the background from you because you know this more than I do. People have been talking about Bitcoin halving. What is that?
Oh, it's forking of a Bitcoin. It's when people that own the currency disagree with certain protocol. And so it's one camp goes one way and one camp goes another way. And whoever owned the token will usually get a portion of each.
Got it. Okay. So the investing in crypto, Bitcoin, whatever people choose, has become popular because we've seen a lot of celebrities do ads for it, post about it on their Instagram. And I know at least as of last year, there was a bunch that were in trouble for promoting this kind of thing. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I'm sorry, I'm looking down. I want to look at my notes so I don't get this wrong.
That's okay.
So Kim Kardashian last year paid a penalty. Well, she had to pay the SEC $1.26 million.
She did. Wow. Okay.
She did, even though she was paid only $250,000. I think the currency was Euro, Ethereum Max.
Yeah.
For promoting it on her Instagram. Floyd Mayweather and DJ Khaled, Floyd paid $614,000. DJ Khaled paid $152,000 in 2020. Stephen Seagal paid $314,000.
So these guys were just promoting something that they really didn't do research.
So the question is, what went wrong? Why did they have to pay something? Yeah. So it goes back to this assumption or understanding, is cryptocurrency a security? And I don't want to go into the test and the prongs of the test because I don't think the listeners would be that interested at this time, but it refers back to an older case called SEC versus Howie, that there are four prongs in determining whether an asset is considered a security under the laws. And if it's deemed to be a security under the securities laws, the Securities Act of 1933 requires that a person promoting a security discloses the compensation that they received and when they received it. And that's the rub. All of these people were penalized or fined by the government for not having disclosed their compensation. Now, here's the interesting thing from what I read about Floyd Mayweather. And as I said, appreciate this is not the focus of what I do, but reading it out of curiosity, I don't think he even said anything. I think he wore swag and in advertisements. And that was his violation.
So
if you delve into it, and I said whether things are a security or not, it's not really clear. Mm-hmm. Kim Kardashian's lawyers, in my mind, and I haven't read the details of it. And I wouldn't, even if I read the details of it, I might not know the back and forth that occurred behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. For anybody who's dealt with a lawyer, you realize that the conversations you have with your client are not always going to come public. Mm-hmm. They may have conceded whether crypto was security or not. They should not, if they tried to fight, I'm sure they may have considered it. When you're in a legal battle, which I've been in, I'm in a litigation right now and an investment I've made. Mm-hmm. And again, unfortunately, I'd love to talk about it publicly, but obviously I can't for a range of legal reasons, even though I'm the victim on this. And when you're involved in a litigation, there's the economic cost of paying your lawyers. Mm-hmm. There's the emotional stress that you're under and you're rolling the dice.
Yeah.
So I'm not suggesting that how she ended up settling with the SEC was wrong, but I'm just saying it's not necessarily binary or black and white that she was caught red-handed because they might've taken the position it's not a security.
I see. Okay. So when it comes to the SEC rules, how is doing an ad for crypto though specifically different than selling like a beauty product that she has or car?
It's a function of if it's deemed to be that you're promoting the sale or an opportunity to invest in a security. So if you presume cryptocurrency is a security, like if you went out to tout Apple and Apple had paid you $10 million right before you went out, don't you think if I'm a listener, I'd want to know that you got paid $10 million to promote it, as opposed to you've done your research based on it and you're an objective intermediary and you're not biased, as we made reference to journalists earlier, that the public, in an effort to understand how to take your information in, really should know that. And that's what it really goes back to, fair, full and fair disclosure.
So was Floyd's problem that he was paid for wearing whatever he was wearing? I mean, what if he just decided, like, I love this product, I want to promote it? Would he still have gotten in trouble?
I can't imagine if he had no compensation that he would have gotten any trouble.
Okay, got it. So that's how we know he got paid for it.
Yeah, like I said, it was more of like a footnote or something else I was reading.
And do you think that these people just got caught up in this? Or do you think they were just, they got paid and their, you know, manager was like, hey, here's an opportunity for a big paycheck or a decent paycheck. Just, you know, send out a post on your Instagram. I mean, what do you think the problem is? I mean, obviously there's a problem with people like us, that us meaning me and listeners listening to.
I'm not part of that us.
Well, no, I think you're a little more educated maybe on that situation, but taking advice from celebrities on what they think is the best product. And it is something as serious as this down to beauty products, right? So, you know, I want to know, like, why do they not have to do their research to be able to do that? I think that's, you know, that doesn't seem responsible.
Well, not doing your research certainly is not responsible. And even if there is not a law that requires you to do it, you would think that there's a symbiotic relationship between the celebrity and their fans that you try and do right by their fans.
That's true.
I get that impression when I've heard other artists speak, like Lady Gaga. They seem to appreciate the relationship they share. What goes through their heads, honestly, I've asked myself that question dozens of times. I presume, but I don't know, is that they're trusting their inner circle and that their inner circle may or may not have prioritized or may have jumped on the bandwagon and not realizing the risk that they were taking on for their clients.
Right.
So the ones that sort of leave scratch in my head on the plaintiff side was TX, like Larry David. I watched the commercial. First, I'll disclose I'm a big Larry David fan, hard not to be. Being from New York, and he's just doing his normal shtick, and in no way by any means could I imagine anybody could say they relied upon his humor in the Super Bowl ad that led them to want to do business with FTX.
Right. Yeah.
So that to me, so when I was younger, I lifeguarded, and when I lifeguarded, one of the first things to teach you when you approach somebody who's drowning, they tell you to approach them from behind as opposed to from the front. So approach them from behind and bring them back to the shore. The reason you don't approach them from the front is we have a survival mechanism in our bodies, and we pretty much will do almost anything to survive, and that they're more apt to push down the person coming to rescue them under the water to help survive. Mm-hmm. So I would say this thing happens in people's money. We all react differently. And so you would think when you're dealing with any financial dealings, knowing that there's a risk, there's a risk, there's a reward and a risk, and sometimes people need to slow down and really think things through. And I think it might have been the failure of that. It was a euphoric growth of crypto, and it seemed all these people were getting rich and NFTs. Even when I boy girl twins and a daughter, and they're all in their 20s at this stage. And I always hear you talking about your daughter, so I always enjoy that part too.
Oh, thank you.
But and it's hard not to always. So I'm involved in my kids' lives to the degree they allow me to be. Otherwise, I'm not really a helicopter father. And my son was looking about investing in NFTs, and I was like, "Are you out of your mind? Like, walk me through the inherent logic in this." I'm like, "Just do me a favor and don't." And thankfully, that was one of the rare times I gave him pretty good financial advice.
So, yeah, you've mentioned NFTs now a couple of times. Can you break that down a little bit? Because I know a lot of us saw Paris Hilton on one of the late night talk shows talking about her monkey picture or whatever, and that kind of exploded. And now that has become, you know, that's tanked. So what is an NFT?
Yeah, it's referred to as a non-fungible token, or whatever the image is, apparently. Mm-hmm. And like I said, as a lawyer, I'm only dealing with it to the degree that it comes up in my practice and occasionally in my personal life. So I'm not the end all be all of explaining what an NFT is, but it's a non-fungible token. And you're taking an object or an image, and it's unique. And apparently you own the rights to it to some degree, provided it's not the rights that are not securitized, meaning it's not as if it's owned by 100 people and you own 1/100th of it. There's a lot of ways to sell any type of asset. But yeah. I'm friendly with some other artists, one in Florida who I've actually collected his art. And he was telling me, somebody approached him about selling NFTs of his art. And he's like, yeah, sure. Write me a check for $5 million and I'll sell you the art. And I can token of it. And it's crypto and NFTs, tokenization of assets. And I'll walk you through it. Tokenization of an asset. Let's say, Rachel, you and I want to offer interest in an asset. Let's say we own a building. Mm-hmm. And the building's $10 million and we want to sell it. And we don't think trying to find 10 people with $1 million each to chip in is going to be feasible. Mm-hmm. So we're going to sell it in $100,000 or $10 increments and divide $10 million by $10 and we'll try to sell that many tins in it. So that's called tokenization of an asset or securitizing an asset. There's a range of other issues that still exist in being able to use crypto or tokenization, which I think that might be the future of how that asset might be used. Mm-hmm. And I know you spent 5 years at Bloomberg. I did my research on you too. Mm-hmm. And with regard to tokenization of an asset, due to anti-money laundering and common reporting standards, which are tax and terrorist-related reporting data, mm-hmm. that's one of the challenges right now, that if you go into the market to buy a token and you now want to sell it to some other person, no one knows who you're selling it to, the identity of that person, theoretically. You don't know whether they're a criminal, what their net worth is, their sophistication. Right. There's a lot of unknowns still. But once right. that gets cracked, and I expect it will, I think we'll start to see the new stage of tokenization of assets. And crypto will have an even more valuable distribution role in the market. But with every good thing comes at times other risks. Because right. then you're going to have other people buying an asset that they don't understand and losing their money.
Right. Right. Okay. Another topic that people have that's been involved in entertainment news that is more financial news is what's happened with Sam Bankman-Fried. Can you break down a little bit what is going on there? Because there are so many celebrities that have come out saying that they were affected by this. So obviously now people are listening.
Yeah. The question is whether, well, it seems to be that he took investors' money and used it in a way that he didn't describe to finance mm-hmm. his private fund, which sustained a lot of losses. Mm-hmm. And it became a Ponzi scheme. We just kept
growing. So this is similar to Madoff.
On some level, I would argue, yeah. It's he attracted money based on a lie, used mm-hmm. the money for some other purpose. And eventually, as money stops coming in, you can't pay the people out or support it.
Right. So was there like a something that happened that all of a sudden people were like, I want my money back, and he didn't have any money to give back? Like how did it all of a sudden get figured out?
So what triggered it was like everything else in life, some things that go up so quickly or skyrocket, sometimes fall. They have a fall. So it was referred to as crypto winter, and the price or valuation of cryptocurrencies in the marketplace started to decline. Mm-hmm. Other other companies that FTX was doing business with or that was in the crypto marketplace, I'm going to use the word counterparties to describe them, started to fail. And mm-hmm. as other companies started to fail, and as cryptocurrency started to decline in value, FTX was incurring losses, and they needed more money to bolster their losses. And what goes up really quickly can come down really quickly. And that's what happened.
Right, right. Okay, so I know that you are not a financial advisor, but as someone who's been doing this for a while, if John and Jane Doe, let's say, were interested in investing, what would be the top three things you would have them look into? Not like securities, things like that, but what are good things for them to do their research?
So, great question. But it begs another question.
Okay.
And one of the things I've learned from the industry is it's hard to advise anybody on what to do when you don't have their entire picture, their financial mm-hmm. health there. So first and foremost, there's something called the cash flow analysis. But basically what you're doing is you're going through all of your expenses and liabilities, and you're going through all your cash flow, your income, and you're trying to assess how much you need to survive and what you can afford to lose. Mm-hmm. So that's step one. Just figure out what you need to live and for how long you need it, and what and how much you can afford to lose. So that will govern the risk profile of what you're investing in. Mm-hmm. Also, we look at their age. If you're in your 20s, most likely you're going to be able to take on more risk because you have a longer life expectancy than for 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, or 70s. And so you hear that people's advisors will look to the duration of your life to assess your need for cash flow and your expenses. Mm-hmm. So in that regard, and then it depends on the time and history. So I've been a little freaked out about the marketplace as I'm reading different things. I'm asked to comment to the press and trying to understand and trying to lower my risk tolerance as well. And what's got me freaked out, I think, would probably be more the better question than telling John and Jane Doe. Like, if John and Jane Doe don't follow what I've said, mm-hmm. which there's no shame in not understanding it.
Right. And then what should they stay away from?
They should then hire somebody that can advise them that has more experience than they do, mm-hmm. that can look at their specific fact pattern and guide them, and somebody they trust. If the person speaking to them sounds more educated than them, but they don't understand it, maybe not the right person. Mm-hmm. So it's all, there's a thesis that don't invest in something you don't understand. And so if you don't understand it, at least hire somebody who understands it. Right. And we've all done it. I've done it too in my lifetime, where I've made that mistake, where I did something where I didn't fully understand or wasn't communicated to me. Mm-hmm. So that those are how I would look at it. For me, I've been reducing my equity position and increasing my debt position because of expected volatility in equity markets. Right. And what keeps me up at night is interest rates continue to have gone up. Mm-hmm. You have other operating businesses that cannot afford to borrow at the current interest rate climate. Private equity has been investing in these portfolio companies. The portfolio companies have not had the ability to go public because of a range of different reasons, and the market's not open to it. Mm-hmm. And so private equity now has assets that they cannot sell. I'm reading stories about people laying off. It doesn't seem to have hit the unemployment numbers. Mm-hmm. And while everybody's still employed, now the question is whether they're underemployed, meaning are you getting paid less today for the same job you might have been able to get 5 years ago? And then the other final shoe that keeps me up a little is commercial real estate. Mm-hmm. So I'm in Manhattan and we're in the office several days a week, mm-hmm. but it doesn't seem to be back to what it was pre-COVID, despite what I'm hearing and being told. And other people have different experiences than me, so I don't want to paint a grim picture per se, but it's the grade B building versus the grade A buildings. As their obligations become, there's a lot of people that think they're going to go to the banks that they borrowed money from, say, here are the keys. Good luck with the building. And then the banks are going to be stuck with buildings that are not worth what they are. Mm-hmm. And that the ability to convert them to private residences isn't as easy and is much more costly than most people would believe. Mm-hmm. So when you're asking me, it's money is an obligation. And knowing how your money is invested and understanding the risk, if you're going to put your head in the sand, then it's your fault, no matter what happens. And take ownership of this gift or obligation, however you want to look at it. And spend time asking questions. It's the same with going to a doctor. It's more about people who cancer. Yeah, I hadn't gone to a doctor for 10 years. Same thing. You sit there and say, what are you thinking? Right. So I would say the same thing with a financial advisor. It's my kids and having my conversation with my kids. And as they're like, I'm afraid to look at the app and see how much money I lost. That's exactly the problem.
Yeah.
I cringe when I see how much money I lost. But if I don't look, that's even worse than not looking.
Right.
So it's, I appreciate your question, but I think it's more of really opening up people's minds. And it goes back to the concept of, rather than give you the food, I'd rather teach you how to farm and go through the process.
Right. Oh, I appreciate that. Okay. I have a couple questions from people that wrote in. Okay. Will a Bitcoin ETF be approved by year end?
I'm expecting we're going to see more ETFs being approved by the SEC, and things have been challenged. And the SEC, I think, has taken a very bad position on this.
Okay. Shorts and securities be legal.
Okay, so for those people, to educate the crowd, short selling is when you think the company's value is overstated and you think that the stock is selling at a price more than it's worth. So you basically go to your brokerage firm and you borrow the security and you sell it in the public. So that means you're short the security because you're betting that you're going to, if the stock plummets, that you're going to buy the stock after it's much cheaper and then return it to the person directly you borrowed it from. So that's shorting. Now, I actually think shorting is a good thing. I think it motivates people, whether it's journalists, but it's usually asset managers. It motivates asset managers to really do the research. And when they uncover something, well, it might seem manipulative, but they've fully disclosed the fact that they're short the position, all of the bad things that they've uncovered.
Mm.
So I think if we didn't do it, it would be a one-sided market and people would get away with more than they probably get away with now. The government, like, look, just talk about the police. Do the police know every crime that goes on? No, it's, they get tips from informants. You hear a gunshot, a neighbor calls it in. You see a suitcase that's laying there and unattended to for a few hours, you call it in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same thing. Shorters are one more variable of people that are looking at the market with a jaundiced eye.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's some people that might short a position and try to manipulate a security. I'm not defending them. Mm-hmm. But for the people that are doing it legitimately and correctly, they provide a value to the business and they've provided value to the public.
Mm. Yeah.
But they get branded as un-American, which I think is inaccurate.
Mm. Okay. Should politicians be allowed to trade on insider information?
Not a chance. And I know Congress has some issues with this. They are subject to some degree to the rules and regulations we are,
mm-hmm.
but they're provided certain privileges as a politician.
Yeah.
It's despicable, horrible, but they're human. Mm-hmm. So people make bad decisions as humans. I attended a client event and they had a data professional speaking. And I found this really interesting because I would say it applies in ways that we would have never thought. So as human beings, when we were, go back, 2000 years, let's say, and we were cavemen and cavewomen are walking through the jungle and you hear a rustling in the bushes. There's a gland in our brain that secretes a chemical that reduces our intellectual thought to the most simplistic decision of fight or flight. Now, we're not living, for the most part, we're not living in those types of environments anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But we still have that gland and we still secrete that chemical. And so I think that flight or fight comes in when it deals with money or other conflicts in our lives and our brain capacity just goes down.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saying people do make bad decisions. And so I think creating checks and balances to even prevent them from doing it might be good.
Right. I agree. I mean, it seems sort of crazy that they can do that. So talk to me. You mentioned before that there are things that keep you up at night. I mean, you're a lawyer. We've talked to you a lot about market and what your thoughts are in the market. As a lawyer, what are things that keep you up at night? Like, what are things going on in your world that are worrisome right now? Like, does the state of what's going on in politics worry you? Is that something you don't even deal with or think about?
Yeah. So given what I do for a living, a few of my clients have been more involved in politics and they've indirectly invited me to things where I'm sitting in a room. I look to my left, I look to my right. I'm like, how do I fit into this room? Usually I feel like I have the poor person disease because I for anybody who's a fan, like not that I was a fan of Rhoda, but I always feel like Carlton the doorman. And I was just there. And I don't know when you were with the Tao group, whether you had the similar experience when you're meeting certain people, it was relatability and politics just doesn't make sense to me anymore. Mm-hmm. And I really have trouble believing either the Democratic or Republican Party. And I feel that most of the people I interact with, were fiscally conservative, but were far more liberal in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely do not feel represented. And there might be a few things I like about each politician. There's a lot more I don't like about each politician. And historically, my voting pattern has really been vote for the person that I dislike the least, which is really not where I want to be in life.
Mm-hmm.
But things that keep me up at night as an American Jew, and I identify first as a New Yorker and as an American, and being an immigrant, a first generation American here. My father, having lived through it in the Holocaust, I feel sort of guilty that I was asleep at the switch, and I didn't really think anti-Semitism. And my ex-wife was Christian, even though her father's Jewish. So it's not, I'm not a religious person, I'm more spiritual. Mm-hmm. I don't want to even use the word anti-Semitism. I don't really think that adequately describes it. It's not that they're not hiring somebody because they're not Jewish, or they're boycotting a business because they're not Jewish. This is an annihilation that has been going on. And when I see what's going on in the universities and other parts of the world, I've been living the last 20 years telling my kids, no, the world's a better place. And they grew up with like school shootings and living in that fear. It's causing me to question that conclusion. Because I would have thought with the internet and with the sharing of information, we'd all get to understand one another better. We'd have greater empathy for one another. We would realize what real, unless you're going to completely exterminate a group of people, you're not going to arrive at a peace.
Right.
And so it doesn't necessarily keep me up at night as much as it probably should. But it's gotten me really far more sad at a time in my life where I would not have expected it.
Yeah.
On the positive side, I wouldn't say we all have side hustles, but I have a side hustle. And I have a side hustle. It's called Water Garden Farms, and it actually involves another celebrity from the past, a guy named Dennis Levine, who was with Drexel Burnham, who I presume you may be familiar with the name given your history at Bloomberg.
Yeah.
And he was Michael Milken's partner and did $1 billion deal with Drexel. Mm-hmm. It's a fully automated hydroponic grow for lettuce. Funny enough, everybody expects me to say cannabis, by the way, and it's not.
Yeah.
But the idea is when we're dealing with climate change and overpopulation and supply chain issues and a range of other concerns. And I know you have a food sponsor, because I've like I said, I've been a fan of your podcast as well. It sort of aligns in the same mindset of that. It's something really positive. And so I'm trying to, some of the things I'm doing, I'm really trying to return back to the community. That's amazing. I invest my time and my money.
Yeah. Are you familiar with Kimball Musk's Big Green? I was just in Aspen at a fundraiser for that, but it's something I'll talk to you later about, but very interesting getting back to the earth and all that kind of stuff. So I think you might be interested in what he's doing.
Yeah. So despite the crap going on in the world that I just find sad and shocking, because it seemed that we were on the trend in a better direction, that we weren't putting up with the BS that's being communicated to us, and people had access to other forms of information. And I'm not suggesting I don't have biased information, and I'm trying to get objective information about what goes on in the world. That part just is sort of really, it's something that we all need to sort of speak up on. Mm-hmm. And so I wouldn't, I know you brought it up in a podcast recently. I'm not trying to make this political, because that really isn't who I am, but it's just being, as an American, we all really need to look out for one another.
Mm-hmm.
And what else keeps me up at night? My kids' happiness, probably no different than you. My kids are my best friends. They're awesome. And I learned, I don't know if you've gotten to the stage yet, I learn so much from my children all the time.
I do too. Yes. My daughter can't believe I can even use my phone without her, which kind of is true half the time. It's amazing what kids know. And, you know, we think we're so smart, and they talk to us like we're total idiots. And we're like, excuse me, we've been here forever. But they are really smart. And my daughter's only 11, so a lot younger than your kids. But I am.
Wait till she gets in her 20s. Yeah. I fear my children's judgment more than anybody else's judgment in the world.
Yeah.
It's not even, I never would have thought I would have gotten to that stage. But that keeps me up at night. And then otherwise, it's what's going on with the markets.
Yeah.
Because right now, it seems to be we're in a sentiment of negative sentiment. Mm-hmm. And humans are herd mentality behavior.
Yeah.
If you look at things. And you've mentioned it also on prior podcasts, like people love to hate.
Yeah. And actually, that's where I kind of want to end up with my last question to you is, you talked a lot about this and what you were saying just before, but like, where should people trust information right now. I mean, it's so hard to look, you know, you can't decide between MSNBC, CNBC, CNN, Fox News, because all the news is different, right? And then we have what's going on, you know, overseas. We have what's going on here with our politics and all the different things about people being on trial, and nobody knows what to believe, and everyone's taking everybody's credibility away. I mean, there's just so many things going on. No one knows where to get their information, their news. And then going back to what we were talking about, I don't think anyone should be getting their investment news from celebrities who probably are not, you know, getting too much research done, and they don't have a history of being in any sort of business savvy, you know, way that they can express what you should be investing in. So what can you suggest that people should be doing to get credible information, news? Where can they trust their source right now?
How I look at it, it's multiple sources. I don't think it's ever going to be one source. We all have a bias. Mm-hmm. No matter what the position you take, you're going to find people biased towards it and people biased against it.
Yeah.
And when you speak to people, right, somebody says, like, oh, we'll make it simple. Somebody says, oh, I love that restaurant. It's the best restaurant. Mm-hmm. That person, like, there's a guy I know, every place he goes and eat, everything is the best. So anything he says, I discount to a zero per se. But So even when you're communicating with your friends, it's ask questions. And one of the things I taught you in law school is just to look and, like, given your background and a range of different subjects, It's go to multiple sources, and don't go to sources that are all from the same genre, so to speak, whether it's mainstream media. Maybe pick one or two things in mainstream, pick one or two things in alternative, pick one or two things when you're on private threads with people in social media, and then ask questions and assume, like, even if I'm articulating things, I only absorb 30-40% of the information being told to me, like as any other human. So right. I'm going to have shortcomings in how I share data. Mm-hmm. And then trust your gut.
I think the downfall is that so many people speak with authority on things that they shouldn't be speaking with authority about. And people, you know, they have a platform, and so people are listening. I mean, you know, I had on my podcast a couple months ago, a gentleman who had sued the MyPillow guy because he won the $5 million in the challenge against him about fake news. And people could go back and listen to that. But I found it very interesting that, you know, somebody with such a big platform like the MyPillow guy, Mr. Lindell, you know, he is talking about things that he really doesn't have authority to talk on. And then some random data guy was able to prove him wrong. And it actually makes a worse off case for someone like Donald Trump or people that believe that the election was stolen. When you have somebody like that's giving that information with fake news and no data back up, it takes away a claim that could be real in some ways, right?
So much fake news. Like, I'll go on the internet and see things that people post, and I have to choose my battles.
Yeah.
What it comes down to. And there's my brother-in-law, I think, I haven't gone to his office, but he says he has a plaque on his desk. It says, often wrong, but seldom in doubt.
That's great. So, and then I'm not being paid to say this, but I will say that recently I joined an app. It's called Ground News. I don't know if you've heard of this. I only found it this week, but it's so fantastic because it takes one topic and then it'll give you all the news stories from the left, from the right, and then it'll rate the accuracy of the story. So you get both sides telling the same story, and it could be about anything. It's not just politics related. So I happen to love that. And that's where I've been researching my news as of late. I think it's a really great app that people should be looking at, but not being paid to say that. I think it's great.
You're promoting a security, so don't worry about it.
Right. Okay, good. But from somebody who is obsessed with news and obsessed with facts, you know, as we talked about earlier, I am from the history of working at Bloomberg for many years. And we learned, you know, to have two sources, and it's all about facts, and you really shouldn't have your opinion involved in reporting the news. And we've really gotten away from that in so many ways. And for someone like me who really loves to consume news, it is hard to find the one place.
So journalism has definitely changed. And the media, I used to do a lot more on TV. Mm-hmm. And the articles I'm reading now, there was an article I just read about how there's fewer public companies in the marketplace. And it was written by The Atlantic. And while I applaud them for some of their approach, it was really just so one-sided. It was anti-private equity, basically suggesting the private equity is taking all these public companies private and how it hurts the public investor because they can now manipulate the information and how it's not regulated.
Yeah.
And I'm really curious, like, it's somewhat surprising that they wouldn't have presented, in my mind, a more balanced article so that the reader, like, I'm reading it now, I've discounted their thesis because it's so one-sided.
Yeah.
But it's like a lot of things is like hire somebody who knows whatever it is you need to do if you're not an expert in it and it is important, go and hire a person that it's an expert in.
Yeah, right. All right. So where can people find you if they're interested in hearing more of you? I know you do, like you mentioned, you are on TV sometimes talking, but what's your Instagram and where can people find you?
You can go to sadist.com. It's our website. My Instagram, which I kept private. That's probably the only thing I keep private. I had a bad social experience on that one. So I'm not going to roll the dice again.
Okay.
And then on LinkedIn, I'm on LinkedIn for anybody who has a professional interest in reaching out under Ron Geffner, but I'm pretty easily found.
Okay. Awesome. And obviously in doing my research on you, there is a lot of stuff where people can do their research, hear more about your thoughts on things. If they just Google your name. So Ron, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And you've made a topic that is like very difficult to understand and, you know, goes over a lot of people's heads and boring usually, you know, much more interesting and something that I hope people will listen to. So
thanks for having me. I really was excited to come on the show.
Oh, you're so
and I really do enjoy your show. And I mean that sincerely. So
thank you. I appreciate you so much.
Well, same. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled M-I-S-S, understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.
You train, you track, you eat right. But if you're over 40, you've felt it. The results don't match the effort anymore. That's not willpower, it's biology. Hormones drop, metabolism slows, your body stops responding the way it used to. Maximus is the online clinic that reverses your decline with prescription performance medicines, GLP-1s, testosterone, and peptides that reduce belly fat, restore energy, and boost recovery. Over 50,000 high performers have already broken through their plateaus. If you're ready to turn your hard work into measurable results, go to MaximusTribe.com. That's MaximusTribe.com.